We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, good day. Hey, 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 everybody. Welcome to Head On with Bob Kincaid. No, this ain't Bob Kincaid. The fox is in the hen house. And yes, it is Moran Monday. We'll do most of the normal stuff Bob does. Welcome to the program. For those of you who don't know me, I am John Fox. I host a program on the weekends here, Sunday nights, midnight, noon, 9 p.m. to midnight here on the Horn. For those of you on the Malloy stream, welcome. Yes, the show's been hijacked, but I kind of have permission. Bob's on the road, so we got heaps to do. I reckon the phones are going to end up lighting up with healthcare, 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 and more healthcare. I've got a couple of things lined up. Moran Monday stuff. I have a really creepy thing about life in public schools. And just a bunch more stuff, so. Anyway, the number is different for today. You want to get in on the program, it's 304-574-7811. That's 304-574-7811. And you want to get email that rolls in at jonjohn@headonradionetwork.com or use my Gmail, which is the number 12, T-H, the word harmonic, at Gmail, 12harmonic@gmail.com. So, I'm trying to decide whether to get straight into Moran Monday or get into this whole weird thing with the schools. And I got a poll on capitalism and a whole bunch of other stuff. But, you know, I, I am just trying to figure out where to start. I guess we should just probably go right to pardon me, I'm trying to be tricky here. Bob's gonna get mad at me because I'm doing this, but anyway. It is Moron Monday.
What are you, a fucking moron?
Yes, we have plenty of those today. And of course, screaming out at number one. Well, maybe not number one, but it was the first thing that I saw this morning. Bloody Sarah Palin. Really, really, what is wrong with this woman's brain? Now, she was given one of her speeches, which I think it was only like $30 a head in Wisconsin, and she, you know, got a hold of everybody's cell phones, cameras, MP3 players, laptops, everything, because, well, there wasn't going to be any footage of this coming out. But via Raw Story, some of the guys from Politico got tickets and were in there. And aside from just really bizarre stuff, you know, what major political person uses words like bogus on a regular basis? And awesome! These are words I use. And these are words that are fine for me to use. But really, you know, not showing yourself as a wordsmith here, are you, Ms. Palin? But it says here, via the Raw Story, Palin had remarks prepared but frequently wandered off script to make a point, offering audience members a casual awesome or bogus in discussing otherwise weighty topics, John Martin wrote in his interview. He quotes Palin as saying, "It's so bogus that society is sending a message right now that has been for probably the last 40 years that a woman isn't strong enough or smart enough to be able to pursue an education, a career, and her rights, and still let her baby live." Pardon me? And still let her baby live. Oh, yeah. I've been saying for years, you know, kill the kids so you can have an education. What the fuck?
Am I hallucinating here? Just what in the hell do you think you are doing?
And she, of course, you know, praised the military and there were jeers for the liberal media. But this is where, you know, it just goes off into just like stupid land. She starts going off about "In God We Trust" on coins. She says, noting that there's been a lot of change of late, Palin recalled a recent conversation with a friend about how the phrase "In God We Trust" had been moved to the edge of new coins. "Who calls a shot like that?" she demanded. "Who makes a decision like that? It's a disturbing trend." What, they redesigned a coin? They redesigned a coin. It's a coin. And someone else, I think someone else said it was our national slogan? Since when? Sorry. Not buying it.
What the hell is that shit?
Sorry, I'm being... I don't know how else to handle these people. But anyway, enough of Palin. I really don't want to rest on her. And we'll do some more Moran Monday stuff. But first, I gotta do this because this just I was set to do this capitalism poll first, but actually Gail had this last night, and I finally had a look at it this morning, and this is just bizarre. Bear with me a minute. This is from a blog over at Open Salon called Humdrum Star, and you can find links to everything that we're covering today over on the Head On blog, which is headon.headonradionetwork.com. Thank you, Susan. And the place is just called American Public High School Stories, a Microcosm. Check this out. First period. This is from a teacher. I finish explaining what pacifism is. To gauge their actual attentiveness, I ask several students what the word means. And the responses begin coming back. I don't care, Miss J. Pacifists are of the devil. Traitors, pussies, scared people. They can't be Christians. They don't go to church. Then Bradley hits Will on the back of the head. No provocation, no cause, no logic to the act. While passing out papers, Bradley nonchalantly slaps Will on the back of the head. Before I can even release an admonishment, plea, warning, or whatever it is that I was planning to do, Will spins wildly out of his seat. His chest is puffed up, and so are his cheeks. He spits as he speaks, and a teary belligerence stinging in his eyes. Motherfucker, try it again. Bradley shakes his head and laughs. Will shoves Bradley, and Bradley's eyes turn sharply from an apathy-laced docility to wild violence. His teeth grip his lower lip. His short, half-assed dreadlocks twirl around his fuming head. He returns the push. Will retaliates. Will yells, "Try it again, you!" Will's words are squelched as he squeaks as Bradley's meaty hands land square in the middle of his chest. I can hear his lungs compressing. I intervene. My arms shoot out from my sides. My left palm is open, and I press hard against Bradley's chest, my right against Will's. My students, who up until now I had not noticed, have pulled out their cell phones and are fumbling with the buttons trying to access the video function. I keep my eyes straight ahead and begin to speak slowly and sharply. Move back. Get to your seats. Back off. Break it up. They continue yelling at one another. Their primate-like rage is at its peak. I see in their eyes a silent plea. Stop us. We're not actually pissed off enough to go through with this. Still facing forward, I see the awe, wonder, displeasure, and fear bubbling in the irises of my other students. My thin 5-foot-8-inch frame pushes them further apart. Gentlemen, you can try me, but I wouldn't recommend it. The bell rings. They hurl a few more obscenities, a few more racial slurs that are only self-deprecating, then back away and go to second period. Third period. One of my students asks me if Jews killed Jesus. This is an English class, but I touch on every aspect of the humanities, including religion, which is a personal fascination of mine. So I wind through the politics of Jesus' crucifixion, the provincial Roman government, the theocratic hierarchy of Judaism at the time. The answer in the end, of course, is, more or less, according to the religious texts at least, they wanted it done. This was a threat and unorthodox as far as some were concerned. He looks at the floor for a moment and looks back at me. Then the Holocaust was justified. Really? 6 million Jewish victims? Somebody has to pay. You scared yet? Fourth period. It's November 4th. The opening assignment for my class, which I always try to make as thought-provoking as possible, reads as follows. 1 year ago today, Barack Obama was elected president. How do you think he has done since he's been in office? If you had been able to vote last year, would you have voted for him? What do you think is the biggest problem he has to work on? The responses are varied. He's not really black, so he doesn't count. He's a communist. I wouldn't have voted at all. He isn't really black. I don't care if he's black. He's a sellout. He wants to tax us till we are all poor. I like his smile. He needs to fix school. We need new teachers. It doesn't matter. Somebody is going to kill him, probably. Fifth period. In my classroom here in the rural South, I work hard to be most neutral, unbiased teacher in my high school. In biology classes, teachers will lecture on Darwin while constantly winking and saying, "But we know how it really happened." In social studies, teachers will preach to the students about the coincidence, their sarcastic quotations, not mine, that every major cable news outlet is accessible through our server except for Fox News. It is a coincidence we found out. In English classes, students are constantly perplexed by Greek mythology. They want to know why people would have believed that Athena was born out of Zeus's head. Teachers tackle the problem head on. While it's obviously not the true religion, these stories are all made up. My students have been bugging me since the first day of the year with a single burning question. Mr. J, what church do you go to? I tell them that I don't discuss my personal politics or views on religion. You're a Buddha, aren't you, Mr. J? Buddhas go to hell. Sixth period. The day after President Obama was elected, a number of our white students decided they would not be attending school as a form of protest and show of disgust. They now puff up like blowfish when someone mentions the president's name. They growl about his inherent Muslimness and his communist plans. They know he's going to usurp Congress any time now. They just don't know when. A junior was asked how he felt about the separation of church and state. I think the religion that the most people belong to should be the religion we follow in school and government. Majority rules. We're all Christians anyhow, so it shouldn't offend anybody. And a final statement, American Public High School, a microcosm of American sentiment, disposition, domestic, and foreign policy. These are the kids No wonder we have such weird shit going on in America. No wonder we have situations where we can have a tragedy like we had at Fort Hood last week. And there are those that will only use this to stir up fear. And I'm being asked in the chat room, if you check on the show post, there will be a link to it. And it's from open.salon.com/blog/AMITTAIZERO. And I think you should be able to find it from there. And like Lottie says in the chat room, you know, they're echo machines for their parents. But, I mean, this is scary shit. You know, I remember some of this kind of stuff going on when I was a kid. You know, I remember the Carter-Reagan election. And there was, you could see whose parents, you know, really shoved ideology down their kids' throats. You got anything to bring into this? Because, I mean, this shit scares me. You know, and this is Bob's show. This is always about the phones. You want to get in on things, 304-574-7811. 304-574-7811. You know, if this... You know, we always think it's the... We got to depend on the children to fix things. But if we're training our children to be this hateful and this scared, see, this is the thing that becomes more and more obvious to me as time goes by. These people, and I'm talking about the people that want to use, you know, immigration as a wedge issue. Want to talk about Obama's just completely pulling it out of their ass, Muslimism. These are scared people. And what's so stupid is that they're not even scared of the right things. You know, they're all talking about the country's changed. Shit, nothing's changed. In fact, so much of it stayed the same that I'm getting kind of pissed off. And I just keep wanting to ask the question, what the fuck has changed aside from the color of the guy in the top chair that is pissing you off so much? And then I read stuff like, we're all Christians anyhow, so it shouldn't offend anybody. You know what? That's bullshit, and that offends me. Texas Betsy, I had a Muslim problem and I started buying flannel. Very good. But you know, in the very beginning instance, you know, this Will kid has dreadlocks, so he obviously must be a hippie leftist. So the word pacifist is discussed in school, so some dickhead decides that they should just fucking start smacking him up. Just this bullshit mob mentality, too, that's going on. And this kind of crap only comes from one place. It comes from parents. More times than not. And, you know, this shit scares me. You know, I keep thinking about what happened last week in Fort Hood, you know. It appears the authorities looking into it are keeping an open mind about things. But shit! Some people, like Joe Lieberman, I was talking about this on my show last night, you know. Joe Lieberman, go fuck yourself, dude. Already labeling the guy as a homegrown terrorist. And you know what? He's a homegrown something. I think he's a homegrown broken something. We broke him. I just don't know how you can call it anything else. And just speculate anything other than the guy cracked at this stage of the game is irresponsible. But I mean, Lieberman, you know, if there ever was the self-serving politician who really doesn't give a shit about anyone but himself and making him the issue, that's what really pisses me off about Lieberman, you know, what he's become, is it's all about Joe. He wouldn't know a fucking constituent if they beat him over the head. No.
I've got a good mind to join the club and beat you over the head with it.
He's, you know, and anything, you know, he can do to gin up Jewish fear, he does it. And it's really shitty. You know, immediately, you know, once you start talking that he's, you know, some sort of Al-Qaeda terrorist. Yeah, and Betsy, you're right. Homegrown terrorists were the guy who opened fire at that church and also who killed Dr. Tiller. You're absolutely right. And yet we're not able to call them out for what they are. The complete disconnect from reality that's going on at the moment, it's just getting freaky, you know? And, I mean, this gets down to the healthcare bill, you know? It's like you got Democrats all patting themselves on the back. It's just like, right, be fucking happy. You just put through a half-shit bill. But because it has the name healthcare reform on it, you think you've made history. And so far, what I've been able to get out of it is that it's nothing but a mandate to sell more private insurance, which is not what the public option is. But I mean, what do we have? What has to be done to, like, I don't know. These people are so angry and stirred up and scared. You know, how do you engage people like this? How do you engage them on a rational level? You know, when you say, you know, a pacifist can't be a Christian? Excuse me? Excuse me? What were, you know, I might have, you know, run away from the church a long time ago, but I still remember a few of those kind of cool things that old, you know, old JC was into. And when I hear crap like this, what the fuck are these people teaching their children? Pardon me, y'all that are new to me, I do have a bit of a mouth. Sorry, I've worked in rock and roll for years. Just kind of speak how you feel. But I mean, what are these people teaching their children? That Jesus hated everybody but themselves? No. I mean, you know, it wasn't like it, love thy neighbor as thyself. Right? I didn't just kind of like pull that out of my ass, did I? Lottie makes a good point. There's one good thing about it. These kids with the fundy parents will rebel big time when they get into their middle teens. Well, you know, I'm an example of that because I was never anything like this. I think I just, no matter how naive I might have been, I don't think I was hateful. But I had the huge awakening in my 20s, yeah. So I mean, I can see that, but I mean, shit. You know, and if you check out this blog post, I mean, some of the comments are just, you know, amazing. And I think my favorite one is, you're just not paid enough. You know, regardless of the situation, just like, shit, you need to be paid more. And, you know, there's other things that this also shows. And why volume and rhetoric seems to be able to win out over reality, science, and fact is, you know, where they say here about biology teachers, you know, lecturing on Darwin, then kind of like winky winky, but we know that's all bullshit now, don't we? Winky winky winky. So, how can you even give kids the tools that they need? I mean, this really gets down to a fundamental issue of education. If you have to teach in an environment where reality has to kowtow to a mob mentality, and where, you know, if I were a principal and I walked and I walked into a biology class and the teacher was sitting there, you know, giving a wink while teaching biology, you know, as though it was some game to play theater in front of the seculars. Because, you know, they're just unenlightened. We'll play their game, but we know how it really went. Come on! How the hell can you educate children in that environment? I just do not see. And the lack of respect that teachers in not just the United States, but in many countries is just horrid. I mean, you know, we wonder why kids don't, you know, why, like, the American education system is, like, so low on the ladder internationally, for example. There ain't enough teachers, not paid enough. Don't have the resources. Class sizes are way too big. And we wonder, you know, why maybe they don't have what they need to become useful citizens. Just crazy. You know, it's like, thankfully we know people like Cassie and like Texas Betsy's boy and whatnot, you know, kids who really, you know, respect their education. And I don't know, have their parents have given them the tools to think for themselves. And, you know, but this kind of crap, you know, I mean, the one like, oh, the Jews killed Jesus, so yeah, the Holocaust is justified. Excuse me? Now, I know this isn't indicative of everywhere, but shit, it's scary, and I bet that there's a bit of this everywhere. I mean, at least the views. You know, like, that idea, see, and this shows that, you know, and being that this comes from the parents, where you got people, you know, talking about Obama saying, you know, he doesn't count. I mean, this is a serious part of the mentality of what's going on at the moment. You know, I thought it was... Okay, Betsy. But, you know... Like during Clinton, the rabid right wing just won't accept a Democrat as a president. But we've got so many more layers on this thing now, you know, and it's just so crazy. I wish this anger would be focused in so much more of a useful way. I mean, how about bitching about the fact that we're still stuck in a quagmire in Afghanistan? Oh, wait a minute. You probably like the fact that we're killing brown people. Why do we continue to bail out the big boys and fail to help out working people? However, the unemployment benefits extension did get through, folded on that. I think they realized that that was a local issue that could end up coming to bite them in the ass a little bit down the road. He wants to tax us until we're all poor. I mean, where does this stuff come from? And then, you know, is this the wishful thinking of someone's daddy?
Doesn't matter. Someone's going to kill him, probably. Yeah. Me and my daddy's friends get together and drink beer once a week and try to figure out how they could do it. I think they got the plan. If Joe Bob can borrow the pickup truck.
Kind of brings me back around to Bill Hicks and, you know, what you reading for? Fucking got me that with that one. Never been asked that one. Not what you're reading, but what you're reading for. Oh! There's all kinds of weird noises going on. That must be the phone. Hello, welcome to Head On with Bob Kincaid. Who we got? Hello? Hello? I for not hear you? Oh, don't tell me. This nonsense is going to start suddenly today. Huh? Whoever that was, give that a go again. That's just not on. I could not hear you, but we'll try it again. It all looked good. bugger. Well, anyway, just before the phone rang, I was going to take a break, which I think we'll do now. Let's, what shall we do? Oh, a bit of the Screaming Jets. Since I'm doing Bob's show and have some people that haven't heard me before, give you a bit of the Australian flavor. Here's a really great Australian rock and roll band that you may not have heard of. You may remember them kind of from the early 90s. They did have one single in the States. A band called the Screaming Jets. And here's a tune about Pablo Escobar. Here's Pablo off of Heart of the Matter.
Introducing Pablo Escobar. Trained at the School of the Americas. Another day making hay up in Hollywood.
You want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
And alcohol. Everybody loves it, and so do I. And President George W. Bush will party tonight. Damn the consequences. Another shot. The sky's the limit. We resolve to party all the way to God.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am your filling-in type host, Mr. John Fox, normally here on the weekends. And we got the phone sorted out, and I do believe we have News Ninja Gene on the line. How you going, Gene?
Hey, John, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. That was just, we won't even talk about that.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm kind of in a... And a pee on your Wheaties mood kind of thing today. Because I of course read that article, the microcosm article that you mentioned beforehand, as well as the some of the other things for the show prep, like Krugman's article and that kind of thing. And it's like, gee, I'm honestly not sure that I think. In a lot of ways, and this is going to sound like I want to say give up on people, and I'm not, but I'm not sure that they can learn other than via the School of Hard Knocks. I mean, I'm sure that Christianity has its soft side, and maybe what needs to be done is to rediscover it. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, of course it does. Of course it does. I mean, I think that's the whole point of the exercise originally. And no matter how much I might, not be of the religious-y type person, in fact, I'm very much the opposite. In the actual teachings, as far as I've always understood them, there was good stuff in there. But where this kind of thing comes from, when it's the completely just cognitive dissonant kind of statements that are made. They're pacifists are the work of the devil. What? Wasn't Christ like one of the biggest pacifists in history? Like if he actually did exist.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they don't seem to really know that much. And see, I guess what I'm getting at is not that I'm a big Christian believer either, but I'm thinking, if things get hard enough, maybe they can, because they've kind of, people on that end of the spectrum have really neglected their own history, I think, in a lot of ways. And I think if they have to be pushed that hard, that they're going to start having to look for it for their own selves. And I'm not sure as much as I appreciate what that guy had to say and what the commenter said about, you're doing a great job and you're helping somebody, and I'm sure he is. But honestly, I'm thinking that the majority of people have to rediscover it on their own through hard knocks. Sorry, my ambient environment is noisy.
Mute that thing, would you?
yeah. Okay, there's the volumes down now. Anyway, It's just so hard, and I honestly think, like, I know I gave you that, in the prep I said, well, you sure liberals shouldn't start thinking about autonomy and that kind of thing. Remember I said autonomy, not secession, just autonomy.
Yeah.
Excuse me, agent friend, just talking. but it's really kind of depressing, and you gotta laugh, otherwise you're gonna cry. But it's just like I think about Bob talks about that book, United States of Appalachia, and you know that inherent goodness is in the culture, and I shouldn't really just pick on the South because it's everywhere. But I just think that people on the right end of the spectrum, I mean, I feel like we've kind of tried and they're just going to have to find it on their own. That's my view.
Yeah. Kind of going to have to come along kicking and screaming, but this is where it starts getting complicated. Their kicking and screaming is being given a lot more weight in the debate than it actually should have, because they're a small minority of people. I mean, if we start getting into like the teabaggers and kind of stuff like, you know, where we start getting into the more extreme. And, you know, it's really weird too. You know, I really do feel bad over the past, you know, year or whatever. You know, there's been the Tea Party movement that has been around for, you know, decades, if maybe not even like, you know, a century.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, used to be the guys that just went out every year and reminded everybody about the concepts of, you know, no taxation without representation and all that kind of thing. And you know, had their bit of a platform and they go out and, you know, they make their statements. But they got hijacked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got hijacked by this rabid right wing that has no clue what the original Tea Party parties originally were. And I hear that the Tea Party is actually now an official third party in Florida.
That wouldn't surprise me, though I hadn't heard that one myself. What a news ninja, huh? I guess the sad part about that, it's sad because basically the people that are really fueling all this, I mean, they're keeping all mum about this. I mean, the only thing you hear is about the guy saying, you know, the banker, Goldman Sachs is doing God's work. That's a bit much.
Yeah. Hey, we're ripping you off blind. It's God's work. Now just shut up and go back to your job if you still have one.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you know that biblical verse said, "Love thy neighbor as himself." This guy's thinking that is Jesus' embraced greed or something like that. I'm still reading the article, so might be a little off. But
look for Calvinist keywords.
good old Calvin Gotti.
Well, you know, I was
one Christian father I could do without.
Well, you know, I actually the first church my family was raised in was a Calvin Lutheran church, right? Calvary Lutheran Church, and it was part of that.
Really?
Yeah. And I, you know, the guy was so boring. Like he was so boring that his peace sign when he do the benediction didn't even get all the way up straight. It was like these two like kind of like dangling curvy fingers. And so if he was doing any of all this, you know, God loves the rich people crap, he was so boring, I never heard a word of it.
I gotta ask, when he did that, was his hand on to the back of you to the front?
it was palm forward, but it always was just this really, really, you know, I don't know, maybe that, you know, this was in the 70s, maybe it was too close to the 60s, and like, you know, if he actually did a peace sign, some people would think he was a hippie and shoot him or something. You know, but it was this, you know, this thing. It looked more like the finger shape you'd make if you were like trying to dig something out of someone's throat that was choking.
Oh my! I didn't know it was gonna go there. That's interesting.
you know, when I first started catching on to what Calvinism was, you know, later, I used to think back, I'm going, well, if that church was supposed to be one of them, I sure don't remember any of that stuff, you know. But then again, the guy was like a walking quaalude. Nice man. But when he was out there talking, it was just like.
Well, you're lucky they didn't have somebody walk through the aisle with a cane or something. They hit people on the head.
Yeah, I would have been walking in.
They get you back in the colonial days.
I'd have to be walking in with my turntable and big cost headphones. don't mind me as you were.
Well, I'm gonna let you be so somebody else can come in and kind of probably lighten up the show. I didn't mean to be in everybody. So we need, like I said before, but you know, it's like, oh gosh, reading this is like, oh my goodness. I gotta update that password. Anyway, I'll see you soon. Take it easy.
All right, Gene. Thanks Bye. For everything, Mabel. I'll talk to you soon. And that was our good mate, Gene, News Ninja from Oregon, Goofball. So the line is open, 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811. Come on, this is Bob's show. Light him up. Sorry, you know, it was a little early when we started the show. I was still not quite awake yet, but there you go. I'm getting there. I'm getting up to speed. but, you know, Gene brings up the concept of just, like, giving up on people. And, like, you know, I fight with stuff like that all the time. You know, just, you know, I give up. And on the idea of I give up, let me see if I can find this. Robert Lottie sent me something last night. And here it is. This has made the rounds before. You want an example of someone who's just gotten tired of trying to educate people? Now, this may have come around. You may have seen this before. It's made its rounds to me at least a dozen times in the last couple of years. Now, from an actual Australian tourism website, there's a Q&A page. And if there's one thing that's pretty constant about Australians, they have a sense of humor, and it's sharp. And most don't take fools very well. And we'll just round out this hour with a bit of this, because I think this is hysterical. And I've tried to read this before on air, and I usually end up just in stitches by the end of it. These are posted on an Australian tourism website, and the answers are the actual responses by website officials, who obviously have a great sense of humor, not to mention a low tolerance threshold for cretins. First question. Does it ever get windy in Australia? I've never seen it rain on TV. How do the plants grow? From the UK. The answer? We import all our plants fully grown and then just sit around watching them die. Next question. Will I be able to see kangaroos in the street? From the USA. The answer, depends on how much you've been drinking. Next question. I want to walk from Perth to Sydney. Can I follow the railroad tracks? From Sweden. Sure, it's only about 3,000 miles. Take lots of water. Next one. Are there ATMs, cash machines, in Australia? Can you send me a list of them in Brisbane, Cairns, Townsville, and Hervey Bay? Answer, what did your last slave die of? Can you give me some information about hippo racing in Australia? This is about one of my favorites. Answer, Africa is the big triangle-shaped continent south of Europe. Australia is the big island in the middle of the Pacific, which does not... Oh, forget it, sure. The hippo racing is every Tuesday night in King's Cross. Come naked. Which direction is north in Australia? From the United States. And I love this. Face south, then turn 180 degrees. Contact us when you get here, and we'll send the rest of the directions. Can I bring cutlery to Australia? From the UK. Answer, why? Just use your fingers like we do. I know someone who's lived this one. Can you send me the Vienna Boys choir schedule from the USA? Austria is a quaint little country bordering Germany, which is... Oh, forget it. Sure, the Vienna Boys Choir plays every Tuesday night in King's Cross right after the hippo races. Come naked. Can I wear high heels in Australia from the UK? The answer? You're a British politician, right? And sometimes you really gotta wonder what people think of Australia. Maybe it's the films we release. Are there supermarkets in Sydney, and is milk available all year round? Answer, no, we're a peaceful civilization of vegan hunter-gatherers. Milk is illegal. Question, please send a list of all doctors in Australia who can dispense rattlesnake serum. Answer, rattlesnakes live in America, which is where you come from. All Australian snakes are perfectly harmless and can be safely handled and make good pets. Question. I have a question about the famous animal in Australia, but I forget its name. It's kind of a bear and lives in trees, the USA. It's called a drop bear. They are so called because they drop out of gum trees and eat the brains of anyone walking underneath them. You can scare them off by spraying yourself with human urine before you go walking. Only a couple more and then I'll finish up, but I love these. See, this is why I love living in this place. This is what conversations are like in Australia. I've developed a new product that is the Fountain of Youth. Can you tell me where I can sell it in Australia? Question from the United States. Answer, anywhere significant numbers of Americans gather. Question, do you celebrate Christmas in Australia? Question from France. Answer, only at Christmas. And then, of course... The way to end it off, will I be able to speak English most places I go? Question from the USA. Yes, but you'll have to learn it first. I have had this thing sent to me where people have said, you know, this, because I think it's printed a couple different places. People are like, is this stuff true? I'm just like, oh, Nelly. You gotta wonder about some people. We're going to take a break. Come on, light up them phones, 304-574-7811. We're going to take a quick break. We'll make it a soul break. Here's a bit of Joy Gilliam and I Believe. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid with your guest host, John Fox, here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. We'll be back after this. We'll be right back.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Everybody, welcome back to Hour 2 of Head On with Bob Kincaid here on the Head On Radio Network. John Fox filling in for the man while he's on the road. I'll be here with you tomorrow night. We'll see what happens Wednesday night, and Bob will be back on Thursday, but I think we should go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to Head On. Who we got?
Hi there. Fancy's here.
Hey, Fancy Free, how are you?
Hey, sweetie. Hey, Frosie and I have a date for, what is it, Tuesday? We're going to go to the hippo races.
Right on, right on. I'm just asking.
Oh, and Texas Betty, Betsy, because I asked for the number, and now we're on for this.
Someone wants to know if there's a governing body for hippo racing. I'll have to look into that.
If it's anything like the U.S., there's probably, you know, the version of the NASCAR, and then there's the freeform.
We do. We do have we do have camel races in the outback, but that's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story. Yeah, okay, back to the kids riding and, you know, education of our precious children. Every now and then you get this wake up where you go, oh my God, I just kind of thought, nah. And you know, like you just believe all parents sort of are opposed to dental cavities. You know, you have this strange belief. And, of course, I have a fine arts degree, which prepares you for a life of very menial jobs.
Oh, of course.
You know, you want fries with that. And you're in music, you understand.
Oh, yeah, I know. Spinal Tap was the film made of my life before I lived it.
So I spent a lifetime in like, you know, little office jobs, temps, whatever. And I was working at something once, and you know, you chit-chat in the break room, and I made the dumb statement. I said, it's very difficult, which it is, to raise children who are smarter than you are, which mine are. And there was this kind of moment of silence, and then this one lovely little trailer trash person, you know, wearing blush pink lipstick, I believe, said, no kid of mine is going to think they're smarter than me. And I realized, well, no, honey, of course not. And there was this moment of realizing that this was the product of generations of people who had pretty much stupided their kids on purpose.
Well, that's why I was saying before, you know, that reading this, I just think of Bill Hicks in the Waffle House, you know. What you reading for?
Yeah, my former husband was the first member of his family to go through college. And it amazed me that nobody really cared. You know, they didn't support him. He did it all on his own. And I realized that somewhere in the back of that family, he's going to get himself too good for us. There was no sense of, we tend to think, you know, we want our children to do better than we did. And I'm very fortunate mine have. But there are people who just would prefer that they didn't.
And you know, I mean, I really don't know exactly what to say about this thing that I was reading before. It just really troubles me that, you know, but I think it's just a sign of where we are right now, you know. I don't know if you caught the show last night, but I was talking a little bit about how I'm new to the Facebook thing, right? And, you know, the pitfalls of really speaking your mind in what can be a very varied forum. and you know, where, you know, you're running into people and having contact with people that maybe haven't known you since you got so political. And how I've watched and been involved with just trying to put a bit of information into a debate, and how, man, you can just start a firestorm. You know, there was a threat.
You know what? I've dodged that because I already know too much about people I don't care about, and I really don't care what your favorite whatever is. And so I've kind of dodged it and protected my own privacy. I think these social networks are, you know, they probably are just wonderful for certain folks, but how distressing in other areas. I have another thought, though.
Go, please.
I just wanted to put out this Grassroots, which is an AstroTurf organization called People for Americans for Prosperity. Are you aware of that?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They're the ones that are behind some of the bus tours.
The big pretty painted grassroots buses, yeah. And I think what the name is Americans for the Prosperous.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and that's their job, is to support the prosperous. And I write letters to various congresspeople, and I, you know, well, the lovely Ms. Lincoln from Arkansas particularly, and I like to mention her integrity and her loyalty in serving those who so generously support her. And she does serve the insurance companies well. She deserves to be Employee of the Month. Have her picture up in the lobby of the insurance companies, and a reserved parking place in everybody's parking lot. And, you know, this takes integrity and loyalty. In the meantime, I'm sort of writing like a Saturday Night Live skit on the plantation where they're doing the Nigger of the Year Award, honoring so-and-so for being the one who can shuffle the best.
Oh, you didn't fancy. Oh. You gotta steal set for a woman, I'm telling you.
I will. It took guts to grow up in Texas, darling.
I moved there, and I realized that was a shaky situation for a while.
Well, you know, I have a great love-hate relationship with Texas, and I said I'm from this little town, and a little warm, friendly Texas town, you know, where people say, "Hi, how are you? And whose car was that at your house last night?"
See, when I was living in Texas, I spent more time with the Mexican population than the white population, so I made my choices.
Well, I explained to my kids, I said, the sole purpose of my life as a child was to live long enough to get out of Darrell, Texas. And I did manage that. You know, sir, you set certain goals for yourself. I had a thought there that just flew out. It was there, and then it wasn't. I swear, guys, getting old's a bitch.
I do that all the time. But, you know, I look at this because I remember, you know, see, I was a teenager of the Reagan era, right? So I was one of the first generations to really live through what was the real beginning of this whole conservative movement in America, you know, and I watched the arts get attacked, you know, I watched school music and arts programs get gutted in just my school career, you know, and I still remember going on a field trip, and it was during the Reagan Carter election. And there was some sort of a song going on, or songs going back and forth of, you know, support songs and things like that. And when the Carter kids tried to show their support, all the Reagan supporters just started like absolutely shouting them down. And it was just, you know, and I mean, we were like 10 or not even. We were like, you know, shit, 76. I was like 7 or 8 years old. And it was just the most bizarre thing to watch in hindsight. You know, I mean, my family were all Reagan supporters, so it was just kind of, I'm watching this going, well, you know, they're just shutting them down. But it's just bizarre. Like,
I have a major question here, and you know, I'll go back to the chat room in a little while and let people tell me why, but I have been waiting years and years and years for people to stand up and say, I have been betrayed. I want to hear people say, you know, I've been made a chump of by whomever. I've been. They promised me that they'd take care of this damn gay marriage thing and abortion, and they took my money, and then they didn't do it. They forced me to. And I think my model on this is a civil war, where dirt farmers, poor folks, guys that maybe owned a pair of shoes, went off to fight for our way of life, for the Confederacy. And frankly, they were only, their way of life wasn't all that good. Why do people buy into being used as saps?
I think that there are people that are really good at manipulating people's fears, creating fears out of nothing. I think is a big one. Like there was this thread that I got involved with. Here's the background kind of thing. Someone put a poll up about whether should illegal immigrants get health care? Yes, no, right? And so,
they should have their baby in the parking lot.
Well, I wasn't even going there, and I opened up with a comment, and this is coming from a guy that's lived in two countries with two completely different public options, and seen the benefit that they bring to everyone, right? The topic here was about, basically, well, if the Democrats get their health care through, should the illegal immigrants get it, right? So I opened up, this was probably not the best line to open up with, but I stated, you do realize there's no such thing as an illegal human being. That probably was not the best way to open up with these people. But then I went, but that said, here in Australia, it's very clear. You have to show that you are paying your taxes to get your Medicare card, which means you're paying into the levy for you to get something out of it. Someone who is undocumented or whatever would not be able to show that. So your fear about giving health care to the illegals, whether, we have a disagreement on the concept of illegal people,
My first thought on that, John, is no, I really enjoy folks with tuberculosis coughing over me in the, as they fix my food in the restaurant.
Well, and also that said, if you are a visitor or whatever and you end up sick or injured, you'll still get care here. You'll be billed for it, hoping that you'll put it through whatever your travel insurance and whatnot was, but you still get care, right? No one, you're never going to be turned away here. We might have some problems in some states about the facilities not being up to snuff, but that's the maintenance of the system. That's a completely different thing. You know, no one would throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, and we both have family in Germany. And there's some lovely. I told you about my son's de facto sister-in-law that they kept her alive quite a while with cancer. Ultimately, they sent her to a facility in Austria, which was a hospice spa. But they also sent her husband and her 18-year-old with her.
Yeah.
The family could not be happier with the care they got.
Here in Australia, we have Medicare, which is a single payer option. It is what it is. It's a single payer option. We still have private health insurance if you want to have it, so you can have a private room or get extras or this, that, the other thing, free sneakers, that kind of crap. Yeah, go for it.
Cosmetic.
Yeah, and things that aren't covered on, extras that aren't covered, like, aromatherapy and things like that. But everybody pays into it. It's a really, really small part of your taxes every year. But you actually can see that, you've paid no more than, less than 3% of your income into your health care. Now that, there's still little co-pays and things for prescription drugs and stuff that come down. you know, when you do need care. But, you know, you're able to go to the doctor, not have to fork out any money, and they do what they call bulk billing. And then in Germany, theirs is a bit different. It's private insurance companies. But if my memory is right, but like say you, but there is an employer mandate, and there's only a few insurance companies, and they all are very strictly regulated. And if you end up out of work, while you're out of work, the government picks up your premiums while you look for work. So no one loses their insurance. And my son's prenatal care was mostly in Germany, and I'm telling you, I wouldn't have gotten anything like it in America. And
so lost John.
Got an ultrasound every weekly visit because the guy had an ultrasound in his office. Did I lose you, Fancy?
I want one other point, you know, of how a thought is triggered differently in two different heads.
Yeah.
I bet I lost this. Oh, my.
No. What? I hear you. Uh-oh. We lost Fancy. Ah, Fancy, I heard you. I wonder what that was all about. Don't tell me the phone system's acting up again. That will not make John a happy camper. Well, the phone line's open. Someone give us a bell. 304-574-7811. Give us a ring back, Fancy. I don't know. All right, here we go again. Hello? Who we got?
There, it's me.
Yeah. I was hearing you, and you must have lost me coming
in. Yeah,
for
I lost
reason.
Something at this end. I wanted to point out, you know, when you were talking about the kid with the dreads.
Yeah.
And you said, well, it was kind of like a hippie kid with this. And my immediate thought is, oh, it's a black kid. So.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that, too. I guess, you know what I probably did? I probably put myself in the situation.
We both came from where we came from.
Yeah. And
he's a little Rasta kid right there.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah, and I guess that's also that's something that we have to keep in mind. We always see things from our own personal perspective.
Which brings me something I want to throw out for conversation here. Let somebody else pick it up. But I used to work with a guy who had dreads, and he was a worker for United Parcel, UPS, and he did well, and he was, you know, had the promotions as it went along, and he got into supervisory, and they called him in, and they said, you're in supervisory, we have a dress code, and you have dreads, and I had the same thing with a friend who's a Lakota Indian woman, worked for a telephone company, had long, long, long straight hair. Ethnically correct, and same thing. When she got up in the phone company, there was a comment about appropriate dress or appropriate whatever. And I'm going to leave this for other people to chat about, and we'll bring it up in the room. But you know, is appropriate dress for management taking in consideration of ethnic differences? Is that a topic or?
Yeah, I reckon it is, because I mean, you can get into that when it comes to, you know, Muslims, especially Muslim.
Yeah, I understand they are now permitting Sikhs to in the military, with beard and uncut hair, and turbans.
Well, I tell you, you know, I've seen a few Sikh cab drivers in this town who are probably, you know, microbiologists or something and can't get a job. But you know, I love my head.
Oh, you know what hit me just now, and we're all familiar with it, the Little Prince.
Yeah.
Remember and there's a thing in the Little Prince about I think it was a mathematician or a scientist, and one year he came from Turkey, and he was wearing baggy pants and a little bolero jacket. Nobody believed him. And the next year, he gave his thesis, and everybody cheered him because he was wearing a Western-style suit. You know, this is not a new idea.
Oh, no, no, not at all, not at all. And I mean, Australia's got this particular weird thing that drives me crazy. They seem to not want to recognize superior qualifications from outside the country. And I sometimes wonder if that's our own xenophobia that exists in this country, because you've got plenty of it. You know, taxi drivers, my favorite example. How many bloody mathematicians and physicists, you know, I've had drive me home, and they can't get a job because just no one will look at them because they and I see this all the time, whether it's at the university level, in the corporate world. It's just a really bizarre thing that happens. You know, it's a great place to move to, but if you're it's like that thing with the parents that don't want kids to be smarter than them. You know, don't be too clever.
Don't be too clever, and for God's sakes, don't be different.
don't be showing up the
locals.
What is
it, Homer Simpson said to Bart, you don't ever make an opinion statement until you're sure everybody agrees with you.
See, there's one of the great problems that, what I think it has been a problem in American society for so long. Is, you know, there has been this idea up until about 10 years ago that, you know, everybody was this conservative, you know, the idea of the conservative country. And, you know, we stopped actually having people make statements of any kind of importance or any kind of validity that shakes things up. And no one has the tools anymore to deal with the debate. I really am becoming more and more convinced that we've just dumbed people down so bloody much, and that it's just, you know, follow the road, stay on the road, that veering off from that, this healthcare debate, you know, that we've been having, you know, it's just cannot think outside the framework that has been ingrained since God knows when. And, you know, the healthcare thing is a fundamental shift in thinking for the country. And I think we're falling completely short on it, which is just really sad.
And I'm really beyond words on this.
Join the club, Fancy.
And I have one of those erudite mouths, too. It's just unfortunate. I have to go back. One of the things I take assurance from, and there was a philosopher named Emmett Fox, as a matter of fact, and Fox, modern philosopher, and one of his essays, he talks about a loss of faith, and he says, you know, you one day you're just like, I'm a spiritual mighty mouse, and then the next day it's like, whoops, empty, it's all gone. And his analogy is watching the tide. Now, I happened to be living on an island in the Gulf of Mexico at the time that I read that, so I got to see a lot of tide stuff. And he says, you know, the tide comes out, and you just say, oh, man, it's gone. Well, you know, was here, it's gone. And then it comes in, and bit by bit, and often comes into a higher watermark than it was before. And I've got to look at my world that way and say, you know, it's a pendulum movement, and we just gain inches with each generation. That
so we're just falling backwards right now, and you think that we're going to eventually turn it around and get up a little bit higher yet again? So we just have it's an ebb and flow kind of thing.
You know, if you look at other major movements, to say to our kids, you know, there was a time when women couldn't vote, and that was normal. Okay, there was a time in Texas when women couldn't own property. Property had to, if a woman had property, it had to be within the name of her husband or her father, or she had to be declared by court something called a femme sole, which meant that she was legally a man. She could own property. You know, and now we look at that and we go, what? And there, you know, other things we look at. You know, and eventually, you know, somebody will tell our great-great-greats, there was a time when there was no medical care. Everybody was sort of responsible for taking care of themselves and or paying very, very high insurance rates for very, very little payout. And the kids will go, what? I'm going to leave, but I want to ask you, did you get to listen to that sci-fi story I recommended on Starship Sofa?
I actually started listening to it at one point, and I've never gotten back to it. Thank you for reminding me. You know, there's such a flood that when you're involved with this project, it's just...
Did you get to the part where he's doing an Australian accent?
Actually, as a matter of fact, I did. And I'm trying
How bad is it?
I'm trying to remember, and I...
The narrator's my son, if you'll remember.
Yeah. And to be honest, I can't remember if it was close, horrible, comical, because it's a hard one.
Of course, I'm his mommy. I think he just anything he does is totally adorable.
I think it must have been pretty good. I think it must have been pretty good because I don't remember that there was any kind of cringe factor because. Sometimes when I hear Americans talk like about a trip to Australia and they talk about, you know, hearing them say Melbourne over and over, Melbourne, I just sit there and go, ugh, it's Melbourne! So it must have been pretty good.
I don't know what got me on it. I listen to a lot of different radio stations online, and one of my favorite classical stations is like the equivalent of the public radio in Melbourne.
Oh, yeah. And the ABC.
No, it's not. It's like a local independent. They go to the ABC for the news.
Okay, well...
But it's not kind of local.
And there's all different kinds of other ABC stations, not just the ABC and the ABC News.
Well, for April Fool's Day, a couple of years ago, they had a beautiful chorus... And I forget the piece, but it was done in a church-like chorus thing. But the words were when you bring stuff into the country, you go through, not commons, you go through...
Customs.
Customs. It was the customs regulations for 1994 or something, and it was hysterical. That was the lyrics for the choral piece.
Oh. That actually, you know what? That almost may have been pulled. There's a musical game show that the ABC does on television here called Spicks and Specks, and one of the games that they play is people have to guess what song someone's singing, but they'll sing from some book, and you know it can be from like the Australian Birdwatcher's Guide to say.
So we're discussing the description of the full-throated marlin to music, right?
Yeah, and that is a really common game over here, The BBC also used to do similar stuff, one song to the tune of another. I love those kind of things. And being such a music...
Okay, honey, bunny, I'm going to send you, as soon as I find it here, and I'll just dump it in the chat room. But my newest favorite is the Impressionist Rag, although I think I found it under the Impressionist Two-Step. Which is totally wonderful.
Oh,
it's kind of like twangy country hill music, with twangy country accordion, etc. Good band.
Okay, Pop Wagner.
Pop Wagner.
I just found it.
Have you got that?
I've just found it. I just found a page with it. From the Mudcat Cafe, and they've got some of the lyrics here. Looking for
I'll send
Monet and Monet.
I'll send you a copy because I had it out this morning.
Okay, is there's a recording of this thing?
Oh yeah, and it's wonderful. You will love.
Oh, okay. I'll have to if I can get my hands on it, I'll play it before the show's over. I love this kind of stuff.
Okay, well then I'll play TTFN.
All right.
And you know what that is?
Sorry, TTFN. What was
TTFN?
That? No, what's that one?
The old Bilko show. He'd leave a room saying TTFN, which was Ta-Ta for now.
Ah, of course, of course. Well, don't mind
very
me.
Very old riff.
It's been a while since I opened up those memory banks. But Fancy, it's always good to talk to you, my dear.
Okay, and hugs to all.
All right, take
bye
care
bye
of yourself.
Now.
All right, bye-bye. All right, bye. I'm gonna have a hunt for that thing. That's And I understand, you know, Fancy saying, you know, she's a bit speechless about this thing from the school, and this is, I'm a bit speechless about it as well. I find the whole thing really, really disturbing. But anyway, we'll play out with some Alice. We're gonna take a little bit of a break here. I'm gonna try and find this track here that Fancy, the Impressionist Two-Step or the Impressionist Rag. So. For the moment, a bit of Alice and Goddamn. You're listening to Foxed Up, but not Foxed Up. This is Head On with Bob Kincaid on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after this.
God, how have you been then? I'm not fine, but pretend.
everybody. Welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. John Fox here filling in. And I'm going to get back to something that I had lined up actually originally for the top of the show, and I find this really interesting. And the phone line is open, 304-574-7811. But there's been a poll that's been released. I've seen this Ross story in a few other places. I have it from the Sydney Morning Herald. Thanks to Gail for this one. Free market faith crumbles after fall of wall. Now, you know, they're having the big 20th anniversary celebrations of the falling of the Berlin Wall today with, you know, the doing a big kind of domino fall thing and all of that. But this is there's some interesting stuff here. Dissatisfaction with capitalism is widespread around the globe. 20 years after the fall of the Berlin Wall that heralded the demise of European communism, a poll released today showed. Only 11% of people surveyed across 27 countries thought free market capitalism was working well, while 51% believed its problems could be solved with more regulation and reform, the poll conducted for the BBC World Service said. In only the United States, 25%, and Pakistan, 21%, did more than 1 in 5 people agree that capitalism worked well in its current form. The survey of 29,033 adults came after the first global financial crisis since the 1930s Great Depression and amid celebrations for the anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, which abruptly ended the Cold War. It appears that the fall of the Berlin Wall was in 1989 may not have been the crushing victory for free market capitalism that it seemed at the time, particularly after the events of the last 12 months, said Doug Miller, chairman of polling from GlobeScan, which co-conducted the survey. Most people, 54% across all countries, backed the breakup of the Soviet Union, while 20% said it was a bad thing, and 24% did not know. Support was highest in the U.S., 81%, and Western Europe, particularly Germany, 79%, Britain, 76%, and France, 74%. But support was divided amongst former Warsaw Pact countries. Most Russians, 61%, and Ukrainians, 54%, said the Soviet breakup was a bad thing. In contrast, in 4 in 5 polls, 80% said that, and 63% of Czechs felt the disintegration of the USSR was a good thing. Conducted between June 19th and October 13th, the survey was jointly carried out by the University of Maryland's Program on International Policy Attitudes. An average of 23% across all nations said capitalism was fatally flawed, and a new economic system was needed, including 43% in France, 38% in Mexico, 35% in Brazil, and 31% in the Ukraine. And majorities in 15 out of 27 nations wanted their governments to be more active in owning or directing control of their nation's major industries. Support was highest in the former Soviet states of Russia, 77%, Ukraine, 75%, but also in Brazil, 64%, Indonesia, 65%, and France, 57%, all countries that actually control their own resources. Furthermore, majority supported governments distributing wealth more evenly in 22 out of 27 countries, particularly in Central and South America. About 92% backed the idea of in Mexico, 91% in Chile, and 89% in Brazil. Some features of socialism, such as government efforts to equate wealth, continued to appeal to many people around the world, said Stephen Cull of the University of Maryland. After the collapse of financial institutions and huge government bailouts, majorities in 17 countries want more government regulation of big business. Brazil led the way with on 87%, followed by Chile on 84, France on 76, and Spain on 73, China 71. So, you know, aside from us and Pakistan, no nation had anywhere near 20% support of capitalism in its current form. And I'm glad that that modifier is on there, in its current form. Because, you know, the capitalism that we have today is a very different thing from the capitalism that was, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. You know, and when the restraints were let loose in 1990, it became just completely out of control. And so, you know, for a country that thinks they lead the world, when it comes to opinion, just like completely out of it. It's really interesting, you know. We always say that it was, you know, capitalism that took down the wall, and it was capitalism that destroyed the old Soviet Union. Actually, you think about it, it was a socialized military buildup where we outspent the Russians or the Soviets that shut them down. Really didn't have anything to do with capitalism. Now, you know, I'm not one to be going running around sitting around, everyone, we should just be a pure socialist society. That's not it either. And Shepard's right, you know, that, you know, we're not actually capitalists, not, you know, not truly capitalist. But a certain part of the economy acts as though it's just this pure free reign thing, and that you have no, I mean, they have no restraints at the moment. We're trying to get some in. But you have a whole lot of people out in this world that are sitting there saying, you know what? Maybe this isn't as good as everybody made it out to be. Or, it was all right at the time, but more and more of the same thing, you know, you can end up overdosing. I don't know. Got something to bring into this. 304-574-7811. Come on, light them up, folks. 304-574-7811. You know, is this poll even getting any traction in the U.S. at all? Yeah, and Lottie says, you know, look what happened to the Soviet, you know, comparing the Soviet Union then to us now, pouring money into a futile war. I mean, you know, and this goes back to you know, some of the, you know, the tea bagger populace, you know, who are going, you know, where you see people in the healthcare debates and they're going, I don't want our country turning into the Soviet Union. Well, you know, you're crying about that because we want to create healthcare for everybody. How about you taking that same parallel that you're screaming about and look at the wars we're in? I've seen this poll at the Raw Story, and you can find it at smh.com.au, which is the Sydney Morning Herald site, or you can find it on the blog, the show post for today at headon.headonradionetwork.com, here at the Head On Radio Network site. This just popped up yesterday on the Herald, in the Herald, and, you know, they've been working on this for a while. It's interesting, you know, they're celebrating this event that was supposedly due to capitalism. I was watching some of it this morning here on the news. The big domino pushover. And I have to say, I loved Overman's Worst People in the World the other day when he had U2 on there, you know. Gonna have a concert to celebrate the tearing down of the Berlin Wall by constructing a huge wall to keep people out of the concert. So, you know, anyway, just crazy. And I just find it striking. I really do. I find it striking that so many more Americans can still have this purist mentality when it comes to capitalism. So, you know, it's like no purism ever works. It's just, you know, like I've always said, you know, I think I'm a a social democrat, or democratic socialist, maybe. Ooh, people in America hear socialist. Ah, fucking commie. No. No. But I would like to see a democracy that actually worked for the benefit of the people. Which, unfortunately, at the moment, the United States is not. It's a representative corporatocracy. If you can afford to be represented, you will be. I guess that probably is a good place to segue to this. Where are you? There are a few people that I trust in government. One of them being Mr. Dennis Kucinich. And, you know, yesterday morning when I was getting ready to do my show, and I'm having to look at all this, you know, the back padding that was going on with Democrats about, hey, we got the bill through Congress, you know, we got it through the House. Now it's time to, you know, see if we can get it through the Senate. And, you know, they're all talking about it being historic, and David last night was saying how, you know, when you start hearing people using the words, the code words of historic, you know, watch out, what is, you know, he gets worried that, you know, this is actually when we get screwed. And, you know, after all this fighting, you know, it sounds like, oh, we won, we got a healthcare bill through. But, you know, did we? Did we actually get anything? And, you know, Dennis is pissed. And I have to say I'd have a difficult time finding anything to disagree with him over. And so this is an op-ed. I've picked it up off of Op-Ed News from the 7th. Of November, and it says, after voting against H.R. 3962, Affordable Health Care for America Act, Congressman Dennis Kucinich today made the following statement. We've been led to believe that we make our health care choices only within the current, that we can only make our health care choices within the current structure of a predatory for-profit insurance system, which makes money not providing health care. We cannot fault the insurance companies for being what they are. But we can fault legislation in which the government incentivizes the perpetuation, indeed the strengthening of the for-profit health care insurance industry, the very source of the problem. When health insurance companies deny care or raise premiums, co-pays, and deductibles, they are simply trying to make a profit. That is our system. Clearly, the insurance companies are the problem, not the solution. They are driving up the cost of healthcare because their massive bureaucracy avoids paying bills so effectively they force hospitals and doctors to hire their own bureaucracy to fight the insurance companies to avoid getting stuck with an unfair share of the bills. The result is that since 1970, the number of physicians has increased by less than 200%, while the number of administrators has increased by 3,000%. It is no wonder that 31 cents of every health care dollar goes to administrative costs, not toward providing care. Even those with insurance are at risk. The single biggest cause of bankruptcies in the U.S. is health insurance policies that do not cover you when you get sick. And I'm just going to pull aside here. Why does that simple fact not just shoot a huge dose of whoop-ass type reality with some people? Why is it that you can, how can you look at a statistic like half of all bankruptcies are because of medical costs and not see that this ain't working? But Dennis continues. But instead of working towards the elimination of for-profit insurance, H.R. 3962 would put the government in the role of accelerating the privatization of health care. In H.R. 3962, the government is requiring at least 21 million Americans to buy private health insurance from the very industry that causes costs to be so high, which will result in at least $70 billion in new annual revenue, much of which is coming from taxpayers. This inevitably will lead to even more costs, more subsidies, and higher profits for insurance companies, a bailout under a Blue Cross. By incurring only a new requirement to cover pre-existing conditions, a weakened public option, and a few other important but limiting concessions, the health insurance companies are getting quite a deal. The Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress, states, since the president signaled that he is backing away from the public option, health insurance stocks have been on the rise. Similarly, health care stocks rallied when Senator Max Baucus introduced a bill without a public option. Bloomberg reports that Curtis Lane, a prominent health industry investor, predicted a few weeks ago that money will start flowing in again to health insurance stocks after passage of the legislation. Investors.com last month reported that the pharmacy benefit manager share prices are hitting all-time highs, with the only industry worry that the administration would reverse the decision not to negotiate Medicare Part D drug prices, leaving in place a Bush administration policy. Again, I refer to these idiots that sit there going, my country's changed. Tell me where. Tell me how. During the debate, when the interests of insurance companies would have been effectively challenged, the challenge was turned back. The robust public option, which would have offered a modicum of competition to a monopolistic industry, was whittled down from an initial potential enrollment of 129 million Americans to 6 million. An amendment which would have protected the rights of states to pursue single-payer health care was stripped from the bill at the request of the administration. Looking ahead, we cringe at the prospect of even greater favors for insurance companies. Recent rises in unemployment indicate a widening separation between the finance economy and the real economy. The finance economy considers the health of Wall Street, rising corporate profits, and banks hoarding of cash, much of it from taxpayers, as a sign of economic recovery. However, the real economy in which most Americans live, the recession is not over. Rising unemployment, business failures, bankruptcies, and foreclosures are still hammering Main Street. This health care bill continues the redistribution of wealth to Wall Street at the expense of America's manufacturing and service economies, which suffer from costs other countries do not have to bear, especially the cost of health care. America continues to stand out amongst all industrialized nations for its privatized health care system. As a result, we are less competitive in steel, automotive, aerospace, and shipping, while other countries subsidize their exports in these areas through socializing the cost of health care. Notwithstanding the fate of H.R. 3962, America will someday come to recognize the broad social and economic benefits for non-for-profit, single-payer healthcare system, which is good for the American people and good for America's business, which, of course, the notable exceptions being insurance and pharmaceuticals. Now, the only thing that I'll disagree with them there is that the pharmaceutical companies, I think, won't, even with a strong public option, wouldn't get hurt that much. The insurance companies, but are for sure the target. But, I mean, you cannot argue with the guy. Dennis knows what's up. And we wonder why he gets marginalized. He says what needs to be said. He's one of the only guys that, you know, I was saying this yesterday, you know, we have this terrible disease in America. We can always discuss the wedgy, skirty issues, but we never actually talk about whatever the elephant is in the room. But here Dennis is going, hi, there's the elephant. Let's talk about that. No. Not talking about, no. Let's talk about the elephant. It's big, it's white, it's fat, and the floor is about to collapse underneath its fat ass and take the rest of us with it. Sometimes I really wonder, you know, Dennis is like the only guy we got. Just absolutely crazy. We're going to take a little bit of a breather here and come back for the top of hour three, hoping to take some of y'all's calls. But I'm going to play a track here from Amanda Palmer. Kid A sent me some of this stuff. Amanda Palmer is from the Dandy Warhols, and she released a solo album about a year ago. Produced by a favorite of ours over on Foxed Up, Mr. Ben Folds of Ben Folds 5 fame. And here's another piano basher. Michael was very right. One listen and you can understand why Ben wanted to be involved in the production of this record. And I dig this stuff. It got me hooked straight away. And I'm not sure which one to play. I think I'm an astronaut, a short history of nearly nothing. It's a great record. If you dig this, check out the rest of the album. I'm going to very soon. Amanda Palmer, everybody. And you're listening to John Fox filling up in for Bob Kincaid. Sorry, Dresden Dolls. Pardon me. Thank you, Kid A. Dresden Dolls. Dandy Warhols. What am I, a moron? All right, folks. It's not my show. I'm all confused. Anyway, we'll see you after the break. You're listening to The Horn.
Small enough to slip inside a book. Small enough to cover with your hand. Because everyone around you wants to look. Is it enough to have some love? Small enough to fit inside the cracks. The pieces don't fit together so quick. So all the breaking and all the playing.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention 24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Well, it ain't Bob. It's John. Welcome back. Head On with Bob Kincaid here on the Head On Radio Network. The phone line is open, 304-574-7811. And just checking out what Fancy Free pointed us to. And because we like music and we like things that, well, take a little bit of brain power. The Impressionist Two-Step. Pop Wagner performs with Kate McKenzie, Don Newton, and Carl Smelker.
Monet and Manet were strolling down the LEC. They were picking out pastels and other kinds of paint. Eddie said to Claude, I got some rouge that's really odd. It's an indigo from Cairo, but I bet you ain't. Well, they continued this discussion over coffee and an English muffin when Andre Darren joined them in their talking beverage, you see. Andre was on his way to London, so Monet winked and he told him, if you get to Charing Cross, man, paint one of the bridge for me. Monet concerned himself with atmosphere and light. He worked on lots of canvases at the same time, and as it got darker, he just painted on down the line. Manet did some stuff that's really out of sight. Some other guys in that league were Rodin, Cezanne, Lautrec, and don't forget Paul Gauguin. He had an eye for perspective and an ear for love. Camille Pissarro was older than the rest of the bunch. He was scoping out a brand new style. He was missing the point, so every once in a while he'd go on up to Martin Marsh and talk it over with the others over lunch.
Monet
concerned himself with atmosphere and light. He worked on lots of canvases at the same time, and as it got darker, he just painted on down the line. Manet did some stuff that's really out of sight. Some other guys in that league were Rodin, Cezanne, LeFrec, and don't forget Paul Gauguin. Oh, don't forget Paul Gauguin.
And the conservatives are going, what a bunch of freaky liberals. I love it. That's fantastic. You can find that on over on MySpace video. Just look up the Impressionist Two-Step. The video clip's really good, too. Excellent. Thank you, Fancy. Okay. We're going to go to one of my favorite people. Y'all ain't gonna ring the phones off the wall. And I understand, you know, this was kind of a last minute thing, me fill it in, so hopefully people will catch on and we'll have a few more tomorrow night. But one of my favorite blogs, Farangula, from scienceblogs.com, and I sent a piece from Bob a couple weeks ago that ended up making quite a splash, and P.Z. Myers, he's a biologist at the University of Minnesota Morris, and he writes one of the best blogs out there, I reckon. And it just says, I get email. Some crazy lady in British Columbia named either Sonia or Tanya Jensen has me on a mailing list. I'm in good company. Also on the list are the president of my university, Baba Brunings, as well as Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, the governor of Alaska, Greenpeace, Angela Merkel, and the German Vulcan Trust. Strangely, NASA is not on the list. Without exception, all of her emails are raving mad. Here's her latest, which I think is one of the funniest examples of her output. Could NASA cause the sudden death of every living thing on Earth? The moon will not give its light. Matthew 24:27-29. Dear NASA, do you realize that bombing the moon could cause the sudden death of every living thing on Earth, including mankind? You could also interfere with the moon's ability to light up the Earth at night. So don't compromise the planets by recklessly bombing the moon. I saw on October 29, 2009, that NASA has been bombing the moon to see if there's water on it. You can't find water by bombing. See the article below. I heard the bomb did not detonate, and it is lodged inside the moon's crater. I heard NASA sent another bomb to the moon last week, October 31st, but the rocket malfunctioned. If there is a live, unexploded bomb in the moon's crater and another bomb is driven into it, this could cause a larger nuclear reaction on the moon, perhaps causing a huge chunk of the moon to dislodge and hurl through space. That's not a good idea, as the bomb could push the moon out of orbit and cause part or all of it to crash, with a worst-case scenario, to crash into the sun or the Earth. A collision of moon rock with the Earth could cause such a dust cloud that it could affect the Earth's atmosphere and destroy our air supply. NASA has an underground bunker with life support. The human race does not. Don't euthanize the human race by bombing planets. Planets? NASA, you don't have the right to destroy the human race by driving pieces of planets into space or into the Earth, affecting us all. The Bible prophesies the moon would not give its light at the end of time. Matthew 24:27-29. For just as the lightning comes from the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. The sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of all the heavens will be shaken. Jesus said at the end time, mankind would be separated into wheat and the weeds. I know which side I hope I'm on. In other words, if we don't repent our reckless chicanery, we will be destroyed. Harvest. Harvest. I mean, this is just fun. Make this a bit of a spoken word piece. Gather my godly ones to me. Psalms 50:5-6 says, gather my godly ones to me. Those who have made a covenant with me by sacrifice, and the heavens declare his righteousness, for God himself is judge. Be ashamed of your harvest, Jeremiah 12, verse 13 says. They have sowed wheat and have reaped thorns. They have strained themselves to no profit. But be ashamed of your harvest because of the fierce anger of Yahweh. The workers are few, Matthew 11:37 says. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Holy crap. And this person just goes on and on. Come on, Fairlingo. Where do you come back in? Oh. Just goes on and on and on. But, you know, bombing the moon. Okay, first of all, can we just back up a little bit here? Before you start confusing a moon with a planet, can we talk about this moon shining on the Earth thing? Just asking, you do realize that light that you see of the moon every night is the light of the sun reflecting off the moon back down to the Earth. Okay, just there. But I love how, now Lottie, you could answer this for me. There was nothing like nuke about those bombs that they sent into the moon to create the dust cloud to try and get a picture of, right? I didn't miss anything here. There wasn't anything nuclear about it. I don't believe there was. So, you know, we go from, you know, two warheads to one nuclear warhead going into the back of another. Okay, thank you, Lottie. Need to know something about science or following what NASA's up to. Lottie's a man. So, you know, so if there's a live unexploded bomb in the moon's crater and another bomb is driven into it, this could cause a large nuclear reaction on the moon. Really? 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 Kid A in the chat room has decided might get help with some like direct definitions. The moon equals a mirror. The sun, a massive incandescent gas, a giant nuclear furnace. Absolutely nuts. But what's interesting is that there's all this, you know, getting workers out to, you know, all this worker stuff, you know, keeps making me think that Jesus was a socialist. Huh? But these... Okay, I'm just trying to find a point in this thing where I can save you the pain. But at the end it says, Please find my attached my Bible summary. Please look up end time in the summary attached and see that Jesus, the true prophet and our Savior, prophesied about these things occurring over 2,000 years ago. The Bible's message does offer hope, as at Daniel 2:44. God promised a kingdom that will never be brought to ruin and that he would wipe the tears from our eyes. Death and mourning will be no more. Please look these scriptures up in my attached Bible summary. God loves each and every one of us, and the Bible offers hope for all. Let's start to follow the golden rule and love God and our neighbor. I mean, you know, this is all fine and dandy, but what the hell does this have to do with bombing the moon? And then they go off talking about the Chinese trying to seed clouds before the Beijing Olympics. Woo! If ominous weather were to threaten the Olympic events, Chinese officials would give the okay to shoot the rockets into the atmosphere in order to make the rain clouds dump out all of its precipitation before reaching Beijing. What ramifications would this have had on the atmosphere we share? How would traces of silver iodide impact our lungs, our ozone, our water? U.S. flags have been emblematically planted on the moon, although no nation can claim ownership any part, blah, 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 blah. It's really weird how you can get some people with a mix of religion, abstract bits of science, and then not a clue. Do you reckon that Hillary Clinton read this? And Space 1999 keeps coming up in the chat room. Yeah, in case we have to leave the pale blue dot. You're right there, Sparky. You know, sometimes you, like, this is just what, you know, he's usually got a little, PZ usually has a little bit more to add to these things, but I think he's just left it to them to do the talking. Just really, really, really bizarre. And I'd want to know, the same person, if you started talking about climate change, would they suddenly lose all that worrying about, you know, iodide in the clouds and shit like that? Just asking. But yeah, Lottie, it's like I'm sitting there reading this, and it's like pulling abstract bits of science and religion and stuff together and, like, mixing it all up into this kind of goo that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Because, like, if, you know, you just were listening to this as a rant and you were only hearing snippets of it, at one moment you're sitting there going, wow, this person's a complete nutter. And then, oh, this person sounds like they've got real concerns. But wait a minute, this person sounds like a complete and fucking crazy person. Weird people in this world. Another thing that Gene sent me that I dug in, and the phone line's still open, 304-574-7811, really good piece at Alternet by Sam Pizzagatti from Dollars and Cents. Have the very wealthy achieved victory in their class war? And this, you know, been throwing a lot of money at a lot of rich people recently. And he opens up and says, we don't want our tax dollars aiding companies that increase social inequalities. So why do we let our tax dollars help companies that increase economic inequality? Back in 1974, the inaugural year of Dollars and Cents, young economic justice activists like me felt we had our hands full. I was working at the time in upstate New York, helping mobile homeowners organize against trailer park landlord extortion. I had one friend active on a campaign to win bargaining rights for the local university's food service workers, another pushing for public housing, another advocating for badly needed primary health care clinic. Everywhere we looked, we saw people hurting. We saw unfairness. We saw economic injustice. And today, 35 years later, I've come to understand that we didn't see, the big picture. Yes, back in 1974, we certainly did face injustice at every turn, but we were living, thanks to years of struggle and success by our activist forebears, in a society where politics actually revolved around confronting those injustices and making change that could really help average working people. And even better, we had a realistic shot at achieving that change. The reason? Our activist forebears had sliced the single great obstacle to social progress, the rich and powerful down to democratic size. In 1974, we were living in a society where an enfeebled wealthy, and we didn't know it. Shame on us. By not understanding and not appreciating the equality our progressive predecessors had battled so hard to achieve, we failed to defend it. We let the wealthy come back. We let grand concentrations of private wealth reconstitute themselves across the American economic landscape. We let the super rich regain their power to dictate and distort America's political discourse. How rich and powerful have today's rich become? Some numbers can't tell the story. In 1974, the most affluent 1% of Americans averaged, in today's dollars, about $380,000 in income. Now let's fast forward. In 2007, the most recent year with stats, households in America's top 1% averaged $1.4 million, well over triple what the top 1% of households averaged back in 74. And remember, this tripling came after adjusting for inflation. Americans in the bottom 90%, meanwhile, saw their average incomes increase a meager $47 a year between 74 and 2007. not enough to foot the bill for a month's worth of cable TV. The bottom line, top 1% households made 12 times more income than the bottom 90% households in 1974, 40 times more in 2007, 42 times more. The numbers become even more striking when we go back a bit further in time to focus not on the top 1%, but the richest of the rich, the top 400, the living symbol of wealth and power in the United States ever since America's original Gilded Age in the late 19th century. In 1955, our 400 highest incomes averaged $12.3 million. $12.3 million in today's dollars. But the top 400 in 1995 didn't get to enjoy all those millions. On average, after exploiting every tax loophole they could find, we actually paid over half. They paid over half their incomes, 51.2% in federal income tax. Today's super rich are doing better, fantastically better, both before and after taxes. In 2006, the top 400 averaged an astounding $263 million each in income. These 400 financially fortune paid after loopholes just 17.2% of their incomes in federal tax. After taxes, as a group, the top 400 of 2006 had $84 billion more in their pockets than 1955's top 400. $84 billion more could be put to work bankrolling politicians, right-wing think tanks, and swift vote ad blitzes against progressive candidates and causes. It starts to bring where we are, like, you know, even in relationship to this network, where we are, where the money is. How could America's super rich have so little, relatively speaking, back in 1955 and so much today? What has changed between the mid-20th century and the first decade of the 21st? We have lost, simply put, the economic checks and balances that so significantly discouraged grand concentrations of private wealth in the years right after World War II. Among the most important of these checks and balances, steeply graduated progressive tax rates. Over most of the quarter century between the early 1940s to the mid-1960s, America's rich has faced at least a 91% federal tax rate on earned income over $400,000. By 1974, that top rate had dropped, but only to a still deep steep 70%. The top rate today, 35%. Tax rates on income from the sale of stocks, bonds, and other property, capital gains, have traveled the same trend line. In post-war years, the wealthy paid a 25% tax on capital gains, the current just 15%. So what should today's activists for economic justice do about all this? Hit the repeat button and refight the struggles of our activist forebears? That course certainly seems reasonable. Our forebears, after all, pulled off quite a stunner. They faced a century ago a super rich, every bit as rich and powerful as the super rich we confront today. Over the course of the next half century, they leveled that super rich. By the 1950s, the income of America's richest had been hacked to pieces, as best-selling author Frederick Lewis Allen would marvel in a 1952 book. The grand estates of the super-rich, jubilant post-war progressives would add, had become housing tracts and college campuses for the first mass middle-class nation the world has ever seen. You know? We always talk about protecting a middle class. It's gone, isn't it? This triumph would, it continues on, but this triumph would not stand the test of time. The 20th century would end as it began, with the phenomenal wealth and power concentrated at America's economic summit. By century's end, the leveling instructions our progressive predecessors had fought so hard to win, progressive tax rates, a vital trade union presence, regulatory restrictions on corporate behavior, had all become unraveled. Maybe we ought to ask why before we rush to refight the struggles our forebears so nobly waged. Why, for instance, did the single most potent leveling instrument of the mid-20th century, the steeply graduated rates of the progressive income tax, prove unsustainable? These steep rates, in their time, certainly did work wonders. In the mid-20th century, with these tax rates in effect, the U.S. economy essentially stopped generating colossal new concentrations of wealth and power. Of the 40 richest individuals in U.S. history, not one made the bulk of his fortune during the years of this progressive tax rate heyday. The big fortunes that did amass in these years mostly belonged to oil magnates. They enjoyed what the rest of America's rich did not, a super loophole, the oil depletion allowance that essentially shielded them from the stiff tax rates applied to every other deep pocket. But steeply graduated tax rates have an Achilles heel. The rich hate them with an incredible intense passion. That wouldn't matter, of course, if everyone else loved these rates with equal fervor. But they don't, because high tax rates on high incomes only impact the wealthy directly. The wealthy feel the pain. They also see no benefits, because they don't need or use the public services high taxes on high incomes make possible. Those who do benefit from these public services, on the other hand, don't automatically connect the availability of these services to progressive tax rates. And this, I think, gets into the heart of why do people vote against their own best interest. And the end result of these political dynamics, steeply graduated tax rates as traditionally structured, have never been able to stand the test of time anywhere. The rich attack these rates with far more single-minded zeal than the general public supports them. High tax rates on high incomes typically only come into effect during periods of great social upheaval, during wars and severe economic downturns that knock the wealthy off their political stride. But after these upheavals, amid normalcy, the wealthy's fervid and focused opposition to high tax rates eventually wears down the public political will to maintain these rates. The rates shrink, wealth reconcentrates. I think you nail. I think they're nailing it, just spot on. Today's mainstream policymakers and political seem to have concluded from this history that any attempt to tax the rich significantly makes no sense. The Obama White House, for instance, wants to up the top income tax rate on the wealthy, but just to the 39.6 rate in effect before George W. Bush's tax cuts. If the top U.S. tax rate does not rise to 39.6, America's rich would be paying taxes at less than half the rate they faced in the 1950s under President Dwight D. Eisenhower, a Republican. Even worse, merely repealing the Bush tax cuts, as current White House economist Lawrence Summers himself acknowledged in a 2007 Brookings Institution paper, would not only wipe away one-sixth of the income inequality the nation has experienced since 1979. Similar tax games are playing out in Britain, where the current government is upping the top tax rate on some high incomes from 40 to 50%. The new rate would still constitute a bargain by historical standards for the British rich, who at one point last century faced a 97% top rate. Progressives in the UK, not surprisingly, are challenging their government's tax-the-rich timidity. But they're not stopping there. These progressives are also arguing that we need to go well beyond the traditional progressive tax remedies previous progressive generations put in place, beyond taxing the rich to actually capping their income. And this capping, these British progressives believe, ought to be done in a manner that gives average working families a clear and powerful vested self-interest in keeping the caps in place. How do they propose to accomplish this goal? They're suggesting we link income ceilings at the top to income floors at the bottom. In effect, they seek a maximum wage tied to a minimum wage. I love this concept. And see, you all wouldn't have heard, you know, the last, I think it was the G20 meeting. This was one of the big things that came out of that, was the idea of globally capping executive salaries. And our own Kevin Rudd down here in Australia was asked to kind of head that up, and we'll see what happens. Talk I've never heard before, and to continue on here, with a maximum set as a multiple of a minimum, society's richest and most powerful would only be able to increase their incomes if the incomes of society's poorest and least powerful increase first. These rich, to become richer, have historically sought to depress wages. A maximum coupled to a minimum would instantly create a counter-incentive. The higher the wage at the bottom, the better for the rich, and the better, of course, for the bottom, too. Sounds like this could be called trickle-up, eh? Leading UK progressives have opened a campaign to inject these notions into Britain's mainstream political discourse.
This past August, 100 British progressive luminaries, all stars who included 36 members of parliament, veteran activists and economists, and the UK's most important labor leaders, trade union congressional general secretary Brendan Barber called on their government to establish a high pay commission and launch a wide-ranging review of pay at the top. Now, you know why you haven't heard about this one in America. You probably haven't heard anything about these discussions in the UK. It continues on this, and I think that this is worth hearing. So, the High Pay Commission, the progressive luminaries urged, should consider proposals to restrict executive remuneration, such as maximum wage ratios. Thousands of British grassroots activists have since signed on to the High Pay Commission call. At one party in the British Parliament based in Wales has already made advocacy for a UK-wide maximum wage part of its official platform. How exactly could a maximum wage ratio principle be implemented? Top-bottom ratios could be tied directly to expenditure of tax dollars. A government could, for example, insist that all publicly owned enterprises limit the pay between their top executives and their workers. Late in 2007, delegates of Ecuador's Constituent Assembly enacted legislation along this line. They created a maximum wage for all agencies and enterprises that take in over half their financing from tax dollars. The cap limits the pay of top executive in Ecuador's publicly subsidized sector to 25 times the Ecuadorian minimum wage. Executives at Ecuador's Banco de Pacifico, a huge bank nationalized after a 1999 financial crisis, have been able to exploit and expand exceptions in the original legislation, but the principle still stands. Governments could also apply that principle much more broadly by mandating top-bottom pay ratios for any enterprises that seek government contracts or subsidies or tax breaks. The British government, as campaigners for a high pay commission note, could insist reasonable pay structures within private enterprises that gain public procurement contracts. And there's a lot of money in government contracts, eh? You know? So, where was I? Sorry, I was just seeing something about Australian and citizenship in the chat room, and I was seeing if I could be of any use, but it seems like it's all good. Under current law, in both Britain and the United States, private enterprises that win government contracts can pay their top executives as much as they please. The CEO at Lockheed Martin, a company that feeds almost exclusively off government contracts, last year took home $26.5 million. That's over 700 times the take-home of the average American worker. Lockheed, of course, only represents the tip of the taxpayer-subsidized iceberg. Almost every major corporation and bank in the United States is currently raking in big-time taxpayer dollars, either through government contracts, economic development subsidies and tax breaks, or most recently, outright billion-dollar bailouts. These taxpayer dollars are making rich people richer. Since the beginning of 2008, the Institute of Policy Studies recently reported the 200 U.S. banks that have received the most bailout dollars have laid off 160,000 workers. The top 100 executives of these 20 banks in 2008 alone collected a combined $791.5 million in personal compensation. You're telling me these guys couldn't have given up a couple of million and kept some people in work and not have noticed a damn bit of difference? Are tax dollars insured or increasing economic inequality in the United States? They're growing the gap between our richest and everyone else. That need not be. If we leverage the power of the public purse, as we already do in the struggle against gender and racial inequality, our tax dollars could be helping us narrow, not expand, the economic gaps that divide us. Under existing U.S. law, companies that discriminate against women and minorities in their employment practices cannot gain government contracts. As a society, we've decided that we don't want our tax dollars subsidizing companies that increase gender or racial inequality. So why should we let our tax dollars subsidize companies that increase economic inequality?
by compensating top executives at levels that dwarf the pay that goes to average workers. Representative Jan Schakowsky, a progressive Democrat from Illinois, doesn't think we should. Schakowsky has introduced legislation, the Patriot Corporations Act. Why do we have to wrap this crap in flags all the time? That would give tax breaks and preference in the government contract bidding process to companies that pay their executives less than 100 times what they compensate their lowest paid workers. That standard, suitably expanded and strengthened, could become a progressive principle worth rallying around. No tax dollars in any way, shape, or form for any companies or banks that pay their executives at over 25 times what their workers receive. Why 25 times? The President of the United States currently makes just under 25 times the annual pay of the lowest paid federal worker. Why, then, should we let our tax dollars go to executives who demand and get hundreds of times more than their own workers? Back in 1974, in a far more equally United States, we never needed to ponder questions like these. Now we do. This, if you want to reread it, send it around. It is in the show post at headon.headonradionetwork.com. I think there's a lot there. And I think, you know, it's interesting, you know, it says that the most progressive movements have succeeded in these things after war, after upheaval, you know, when the rich is shaken. So, like, is it this time around that we're going to end up being played so we miss the opportunity? Because, like, this has been the opportunity, right? This should have been the opportunity, or this should be the opportunity now. And have we missed it already? Because it's interesting. After I'm reading this, I'm thinking, wow, Kevin Rudd is following this yet again, okay? And I think, you know, no matter how centrist I realize he is, he might just turn out to be the most progressive mofo out there at the moment. Because just in the last 2 weeks, they've said, okay, look, we got really high approval ratings. We're kind of in a pretty much can't do anything wrong situation. It's time to rewrite the damn tax code. And this is, and we're talking about just rewriting the tax code completely, simplifying it, all that, making it more progressive. This is usually an election loser for governments. But I think in some ways, I wish the Democrats would take a bit of a page from Labor. Labor is doing that thing. We're in government. We have the popularity. We're going to take that political capital and actually do something with it. Not be distracted. Not be pulled aside to go and have, you know, not starting the bargaining process by already having bloody cut your own package back like they did with health care. You know, Rudd had a big stimulus. We're leading the pack as far as recovery. In fact, we didn't even really fully fall into a really horrible recession. It all just kind of slowed down. Well, Sparky, you got a point there. He says you can have all the labor laws you want, but if you have no one to enforce them, what's the point? Yeah, but you see, here, what they're talking about here, at least with the idea of having a top wage bracket, and having it tied to the ratio of what you pay your employees, and having that tied into government contracts, that's a way for it to be self-enforcing, wouldn't you think? You'd have to be able to show your books. I mean, you can always cook books and, you know, business is business. They'll always play games, but shit. I mean, I like this idea more than it's necessary to have a minimum wage. And I mean, this just like, you know, the free market religion people will just be like shitting themselves hearing me say this. But, you know, more important maybe than having a minimum wage is actually having a maximum wage with this ratio idea. Your top pay is directly related to what you pay your workers. Because, I mean, the minimum wage, in a way, is a joke. It is so static, and it takes so long to change it. And, like in America, there's no kind of, you know, cost of living increases, you know, that actually keep things in pace with inflation and the cost of living. You know, you want to make that much? Well, you got to pay your workers this. You want to make that much more? Well, you got to raise your workers' pay too. You know, that whole all boats rising kind of idea, this would be the way to do it. And it looks as though we've got some, you know, Ecuador, you know. I can hear the conservatives going, freaking socialist pigs. You know, there's, and this idea that, you know, really, yeah, you know, you're going, that's Australia, yeah, but, you know, I mean, we came out of a hyper-conservative period before this. But see, that hyper-conservative got pretty well shown out to be untrustable when he made claims of children being thrown overboard from a boat coming from some other country loaded with brown people. And that ended up pretty much sinking him. I still believe that, and the Australian Wheat Board thing where we were paying the Australian government via the Australian Wheat Board was paying payoffs to strongmen of Saddam Hussein's regime through a trucking firm to get Australian wheat into the oil food for food program, basically defrauding the oil for food program, a UN thing, whilst the United States and Australia and the UK were accusing the Iraqis of abusing the oil for food program when one of the member nations, supposedly on the good guy's side, was more than happy to grease palms of a regime we were trying to get rid of. Just kind of remembering a bit of Australia's history there in this whole game. And there's depositions happening about all that right now. And maybe in the next few months we're going to start hearing some noises about some key Australian government people from the last Conservative government actually going to prison. But I think, you know, I like this idea of tying the minimum wage to the maximum wage. I think it's a real simple, straightforward way of saying, okay, fine, make as much money as you want. Make as much money as you want. Set your salary whatever you want. But your lowest paid workers can't make less than 1/25th. That's just crazy. I mean, if you think about that, that's just like a huge difference. But still, you know, what's 1/25th of a million? Get that ratio and you can start working some numbers. But I mean, something has to change. And the apathy of the 80s that seemed to be, you know, I talk about being a kid of the 80s and the apathy, which I lost, thankfully. But, you know, towards, you know, of course, the rich are going to fight a tough progressive tax rate harder than the people who benefit from it because they don't actually realize that they are the ones that benefit from it. And that's sad. And so, what, we just sit back and watch it all get taken away? Or that's what we've done. We've allowed it all just you know. I really wasn't using that social justice anyway. I really didn't realize how important that economic justice was until I lost it. Yeah, and Gene, you're absolutely right. It would change the dynamics of the immigration debate too. I think you're absolutely right. It would force some open books for one. And if the lowest paid workers' rate was tied to the highest paid employees' rate or the CEO's rate, and not being able to, under government contract rules, use underpaid, undocumented workers, which has been conservatives go bitching and moaning about illegal immigrants, but yet the same part of their same platform is the super hyper pro business people, and they most of them extend their profits by using that same undocumented labor and abuse people and, you know, treat them like shit. So, you know, which self-interest do you want to fight, one or the other? But, you know, I think this healthcare bill is going to turn out, you know, unless, and I mean, what are the chances of this, that the healthcare bill is going to actually improve in the Senate? You know, I mean, there's still the other end of the sausage machine that the damn thing's got to get through. And I mean, what are the chances that it's actually going to improve? I think pretty much slim to nil. So, you know, for the first time, I'm thinking Barack Obama could be a one-termer. If this bill ends up being a piece of shit, gets through, ends up just putting more money in insurance company coffers, as is Dennis Kucinich's worry, as is mine. And the cost of health care doesn't start to come down, access doesn't become better. Barack Obama and the Democrats will have no one to blame but themselves. Because the progressives have been on their ass the whole time. And you know what? It's going to be down the road. Once again, the progressives and the hippies are going to be proven to be right. So, you know, everybody's all kind of backslapping and all that, and I'm just not so sure. And what really, really worries me is fixing healthcare right. I mean, and not talking about getting it perfect, but actually going the whole hog. Like, you know, going all in. Like having 196 million Americans on the public option, which they pay into via their taxes unless they're too broke. And if you're rich, you only pay to a certain point, and then you've paid in your share. And because there aren't that 7,000 or whatever it was percent increase in administrators, there will be right off the bat 30% more healthcare services actually gotten to people. And all this is, all the point of the exercise is to simplify it for the doctors, for the hospitals, make it so that they actually get paid, so the money that goes into the system, actually most of it goes to giving care, which is not what happens now. And that starts to happen, but the private insurance will start to come down in cost too, because they realize that they got to compete. They can't just sit on their asses and shovel the money in. So, you know, Shepard in the chat, John, we're all led to believe that Obama is a big liberal, the most liberal member in all of Congress, considering Bernie Sanders and Dennis Kucinich is, that's laughable, and I agree with you. But it didn't matter who the candidate was, man, and we were saying this during the election. Didn't matter who the candidate was. The conservatives were going to call him or her the most liberal in the whatever. The most leftist there ever was. You know, they have the scripts written out and it's just fill in the frickin' blank. I was never under any illusions about the fact that he's a centrist. I'm a little surprised in some of the things that he's allowed to have continue, like rendition, a few other things. But I was expecting a bit more of when the people obviously feel one way, and like healthcare is one of those issues, that even if it wasn't his opinion, public opinion could sway him, where I thought that things like the public option where there's just widespread support, I mean, it's not even debatable. You know, it's like three quarters in some polls. A strong public option. Not some whittled down weak ass thing, but a strong public option. You know, but he's not done it. And I'm sorry, he's just not, there's too much of this deal making going on. You know, I said it last night, I gave credit to Pelosi and whatnot for finally telling the GOP, you know, this sending one guy at a time thing so that they can't actually do the markup of the bill thing. That childishness will end now. We're just going to bypass you. I want more of that. I want more of that shit. Look, if you're not being constructive, just shut the fuck up and get out of the way. And let the rest of us adults get on with it. But we keep playing with these idiots, trying to play nice, and they end up just weakening everything they do, making it a self-fulfilling prophecy that the Democrats will end up failing. I'm sorry to be like all David from Maine on you, but this healthcare thing, this was the thing that could have saved America's economy and by extension save America. You don't sort this, the nation is screwed financially. It's your biggest problem aside from getting out of useless wars from the outsider's perspective. And I don't think I'm the only one that thinks that. So on that note, we'll see you tomorrow. Sorry, I didn't mean to come all like hammer and tongs at the end there, but the more I think about it, it's just like this should have been, you know, hard work to manipulate, but a no-brainer to legislate. And as normal, thanks to Trouble for blogging today. Thanks to Gene for links and research. Thanks to ELO for the chat room and Lottie and everybody for checking, keeping me in line here tonight. I will be back covering for Bob tomorrow. Thanks to Ben Birch of the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archives. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the various people we know always fighting the good fight. I think it's all kind of like Coal River and Appalachia stuff that, Bob's off on the road for. So, you know, who knows? Might even get a call in from Bob tomorrow night or whatever. So, that's it for tonight. Thanks for being here. And we'll see you tomorrow. And, always, RMR, it's all for you. Mm-hmm.
on election day. It was interesting. I happened to see a guy who came in while I was voting, and he rushed right out. So I saw him outside, and I said, well, I pulled the straight lever, huh? That's right, I'm a Republican. And I said, well, you know, there are two candidates on the ballot. I don't know if you knew it. But they were going to win the election, and then they were going to abolish the position. The one was going to actually make it a computerized position. So what you've actually voted for in an uninformed manner is big government. And he kind of gave me this strange look like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. And I explained it to him. I said, you know, the jury commissioner's job could easily be computerized. You don't need someone who's going to spend 2 hours a week doing that. You can do it with a computer. And you would save thousands of dollars to the taxpayers. So what you voted for was big government. Just to make him happy and make his day. Anyway, tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking with Jerry Olowski, treasurer of the Pennsylvania State Education Association. I took a bunch of flack last week for talking about the Keystone exams that are coming out. And I said it last week, I'll say it again tomorrow, I'm against high-stakes testing. I think having one test that's going to dictate whether you graduate from high school or not is a bad idea. But we're going to find out what Jerry has to say and what the Pennsylvania State Education Association has to say on high-stakes testing. Also, Bill Scheer, he's a blogger over at Our Future. He's going to be here talking about the latest developments in this healthcare legislation that's weaving its way through Congress, some of the stuff that's going on with that. And Ari Matusek, he's the co-founder of Young Invincibles. We're going to be talking to him about the young people, because we're not really hearing the 20-somethings saying, we want national health care. Although I know a number of them that do want it because they want that security. You know, I point back to the young girl in Ohio. She got sick. She stayed home. She did. No, I'm young. I'm invincible. I'm not going to die of the flu. We don't do that anymore. Guess what? She died of the flu because she didn't have health insurance. She wouldn't go to the doctor because she didn't have the money. That's the kind of stuff we need to be talking about. And we need to ensure our young people. Because I got to tell you, when I got out of college, I didn't have health insurance either. Couldn't afford it. So that's why another reason why we need comprehensive health care reform. Anyway, again, I appreciate all our guests to come on today. And remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Now is really the time for you to get active, to get involved. You've got to call your state legislators. You've got to tell them, look, this energy rate increase, this is criminal, and you've got to stop it. If you do nothing at all, push it off to the spring, where we can have a reasonable, rational discussion about it. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow, right here, noon to 2.
It's come through a hole in the air, from those nails in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Tune in every Saturday and Sunday from noon until 2 p.m. on WHYL AM 960. Or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Democracy is coming to the USA.
Conversation cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Folks, pardon me if I'm a little distracted this evening. I've got my Friends of Coal coloring book out, and I am having a devil of a good old time. Yeah, there's lots of coloring to be done in the Friends of Coal coloring book. Mostly, you really don't need more than a couple of different crayons there. A lot of black crayons, for coal. Unless you want to be coloring the lignite, which is brown. Brown and black crayons, the sole use of brown and black crayons, and I may be mistaken, but I don't think I am. The horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner could probably tell me otherwise. But the single use of brown and black crayons is kind of one of those little red flags that goes up in sight cases of, whoo, we got a live one here. But really, you don't need much more than brown and black crayon to do the Friends of Coal coloring book. You can get yours if you want. It's over at, just look over a few stories down at thinkprogress.org. Oh, it's fun. It's got all kinds of coded word scrambles and explanations of where coal comes from and how good it is and how we all ought to worship it and have it on our make frisbees out of it and eat it on wheat chex. And, oh, it's just good, that coal. With the little Fokker symbol down at the bottom of every page. Yeah, charming. What's disturbing about the Friends of Coal coloring book? It's part of an entire overall educational program to which little fourth grade children in West Virginia are actually subjected. It is sickening. It is truly some sickening propaganda. I mean, you remember the hissy spit that the right wing threw over the Obama education speech, a month or so ago? Because he was going to turn all our little children into, the little Maoists or socialists or the Nazi communists or whatever. That kind of propaganda rains down on little elementary school children in West Virginia every year. Long about fourth grade. Coal is good. Coal is your savior. Worship the coal. Here's a coloring book and a brown crayon and a black crayon. Enjoy. But there's all kinds of subliminal stuff in this. One of the things that I found most interesting is that they represent a coal miner. You remember McGruff the crime dog? McGruff here! Right? Well, they've apparently bogarted McGruff. But now, there's a little girl in the coloring book who looks surprisingly like Cindy Lou Who from How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And there's a little moon-eyed boy. And then there's a dog. And the dog, here's the fun part, the dog wears massy stripes, and he's the representation of a coal miner. The Friends of Coal represent a coal miner as being a dog. Yeah, no kidding. So, you can see how I would get all excited using my brown and black crayon to work on my Friends of Coal coloring book. I haven't had this much fun coloring since, I don't know if I ever have. But I got to pull myself away from it because this is, every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday are all my favorite nights of the week because those are the nights of the week that I get to be with you. But I just love Fridays because it's Friday on the front porch and we loosen up the straps a little bit and kick our feet back and sort of put them up on the porch and noodle around on the banjo or have an ice cold something or another out of the zinc wash tub over there with the little silver caps just barely sticking up out of the ice. Oh, it's cold and good. Pass around the pitcher with the ice cold sweet tea in it. Just kick back and enjoy ourselves after a busy week of keeping up with the pernicious activities of the sick, sorry, sad, miscreant, misbegotten, misanthropic right wing. And on Fridays, we have a little fun. So if you can put down your Friends of Coal coloring book, I'll put mine down.